FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, one of America's most heralded presidents. And yet, did you know that FDR would censor his critics, put American minorities into internment camps? Plus, he laid the groundwork for our surveillance state that we're facing today. Yeah, we gotta talk about that.
Instead of focusing on winning arguments, we're teaching the basic fundamentals of sales and marketing and how we can use them to win in the world of politics, teaching you how to meet people where they're at on the issues they care about. Welcome to The Brian Nichols Show.
Well, hey there, folks. Brian Nichols here on The Brian Nichols Show, and thank you for joining us on, of course, another fun-filled episode. I am, as always, your humble host, joining you from our Cardio Miracle Studios here in lovely Eastern Indiana. The Brian Nichols Show is powered by Amp America. Really excited to be part of the Amp America team. Looking for some political news, opinion pieces, plus some awesome new content in the world of culture that's changing people's hearts and minds? Head to ampamerica.com. Also, we have a brand new mini series, The Extremist Files. Just did a Twitter Spaces with executive producer Matt Edwards. Brand new cartoon crafted by Freedom Tunes' Seamus Coughlin. So go ahead, check out that Amp America exclusive, The Extremist Files, over at ampamerica.com. And also, The Brian Nichols Show, yours truly, how about that, is personally powered by Cardio Miracle, our studio sponsor. Folks, the Cardio Miracle difference is real, 1,000%. Back this past week, I went to the doctors for my six-month checkup, and she said, "Brian, your blood pressure is the best it's been in years. What are you doing?" And I smiled, and I said, "Well, I found a Cardio Miracle, and I gotta tell you, I'm seeing the differences for myself." Now, she didn't know what a Cardio Miracle was, but if you're a longtime listener here at The Brian Nichols Show, you know what Cardio Miracle it is. It is the best heart health supplement in the world. Lower blood pressure, better sleep, better ingredients, Papa John's. No, I'm just kidding. Better everything across the board when it comes to an improved heart. And I'm seeing the differences for myself. I want you to experience the differences for yourself as well. So head to the show notes if you go joining us here on the YouTubes, or if you're listening to the podcast version. In your show notes, you'll see a link for Cardio Miracle. Click the link. It'll bring you right over to our friends, cardiomiracle.com. Use code TBNS. You're going to get 15% off your order. And folks, by the way, there's literally nothing to lose because there's a 100% money-back guarantee. So don't take my word for it. Go ahead, experience the Cardio Miracle difference for yourself. But heck, join the tens of thousands of other folks out there who have already seen the Cardio Miracle difference, the folks who have lowered their blood pressure like yours truly, the folks who are getting a better pump at the gym like yours truly, and also the folks who are getting a much more restful, soundful sleep. Yes, yours truly included in that as well. So one more time, link in the show notes, Cardio Miracle. Start your heart health journey today. Your heart will thank you. All right, folks, we paid the bills, and now we're going to go ahead and talk about paying the bills of yesteryear. Yes, when we go back to one of America's most heralded presidents, and that is one Franklin D. Roosevelt. We've all heard the history classes singing his praises. My goodness, our four-term president who did so much to save the country, to help get us out of the Great Depression. Yeah, we saw all of this happen back in the 1930s and 40s, and yet maybe we should look at FDR, and I say maybe if you are on the right side of the aisle, most definitely you already have, but for folks out there who haven't really looked at FDR in any real seriousness, they're taking what they've heard in the history classes as gospel, as truth. Well, maybe they need to read a brand new book that just came out, The New Deal's War on the Bill of Rights, The Untold Story of FDR's Concentration Camps, Censorship, and Mass Surveillance. To discuss that brand new book and more, join us here on The Brian Nichols Show, David Beto, welcome to the program. How you doing?
Thank you for inviting me. Doing great.
Great to have you on, and I'm really excited to dig into this book, David, because I heard it, and I know all the folks who have gone through the government indoctrination centers that we look at and call K-12 schools. They've probably experienced it as well. FDR, we are literally taught his amazing feats of accomplishments. He's listed in the top five presidents for all these kids as they're going through grade school. Really being force-fed this narrative, FDR, one of the best presidents out there, David. But to the contrary, your book's going to go ahead and outline some not just issues with FDR's, his presidency, but also some of the dark areas that maybe have been glossed over over the past, 80, 90 years. But before we go ahead and dig into that, David, do us a favor. Introduce yourself here to the Brian Nichols Show audience. And also, why the focus on politics from yesteryear, specifically New Deal and the FDR administration?
Well, I'm a professor emeritus of history at the University of Alabama, and that's my thing, history. So that's what I got into this. I've written a number of books that touch on the 1930s, including a book about taxpayers' revolts during the 1930s, which is another subject not many people know about. The role of private organizations, mutual aid organizations, in providing social welfare before the welfare state came along. So I sort of touched on this period, and I've seen the pro-FDR comments, right? He's usually rated by my fellow historians as number two, sometimes number one in the greatest category. And if you look closely, you find a lot of problems with that rating. You look at economic issues, which was not my concern in this book. We're still in a Great Depression 10 years after it started. Not much of a success. So I think as I looked more into it, I saw that he was overrated in a lot of ways. And then I kept coming across examples of FDR's attitude, which was anything to achieve the goal attitude, any means necessary. And there was a kind of jaded and cynical and ruthless quality about him that, as I looked more closely, and certainly most people are aware of Japanese internment, although FDR called them concentration camps. That was his term. So I don't think I'm being unfair in using his term. I started to look at other things like censorship of the press, censorship of radio, his use of things that are familiar today. If you read the Twitter files, of using government to go behind the scenes to attack what he, in fact, called fake news, to force people off the air. And by the late 1930s, all the radio commentaries on networks were pro-FDR, or at least we're not anti-New Deal. So I'll just leave it to you, ask more questions, but that gives you a rough introduction.
Well, and it's important we're having this conversation, David, right? Because you go back to what I articulated in my intro, and that is, well, it seems like everybody who goes through grade school is given this force-fed narrative that FDR is one of the best presidents we've ever had. And you go out and you talk to your average person, I don't think they look at FDR with the disdain that, frankly, an average person in 2024 should be objectively able to do, because FDR, man, whether it's our standards today or the standards in the 1930s and 40s, he wasn't a good dude. He was doing a lot of bad things. He was putting American citizens behind bars just for the color of their skin or their ethnicity. He went through really, I mean, yes, he laid the foundation for a lot of the surveillance state. Heck, he took what Woodrow Wilson 30 years earlier really helped put in place as well, and he just brought it to an 11. We saw this back in our last episode we recorded with Joe Golisarian talking about Woodrow Wilson and how he really was helping, you know, use a lot of this misinformation narrative, trying to go after folks who disagreed with him and lay the groundwork as to, well, this is why it's okay. And FDR took that and he put the pedal to the metal. So I say all that, David, you know, without something like your book here, and frankly, without a real, and let's call it a realistic look at history, a lot of the nefarious actions of an FDR administration would be completely forgotten. I mean, looking back to, you mentioned that the censorship, the surveillance, the internment, but I mean, trying to pack the courts, trying to manipulate the press. You go down through the rabbit hole of all these really not so great things that FDR did. I think a lot of folks out there, they're completely clueless. So my question to that, David, is how do we reach the average person besides, you know, having a book like you've written here today that we're talking about? But what's the best way you found to, yes, enter into conversations from yesteryear in 2024 to help paint a picture of, hey, Mr. Mrs. Average Citizen, maybe the history you've been taught isn't the history that actually happened, and here's why it's important for today. When my friends over at Blood of Tyrants said, "Hey Brian, we know you don't drink alcohol, but we have a great product built for you," I knew something must be up. And that's when I found out about Liquid Freedom. Crafted with natural ingredients and the power of yerba mate, this revolutionary energy tea is 100% sugar-free and crash-free. So you can go ahead and use code TBNS at checkout for 10% off your orders, and you can sip with a purpose while also embracing the freedom revolution minus the alcohol. One more time, get your Liquid Freedom tea by heading to BrianNicholsShow.com/tea. And now back to the show.
Well, before I go on to why it's important for today, and it certainly is, most people are aware of the Japanese internment, right? And they'll say that was bad. And they maybe say that that was a mistake for FDR to do that. But my book shows the full extent of his involvement. FDR is often portrayed in history books as distracted, as he's got so much on his mind, he just sort of allows this to happen. And there was so much hysteria, he kind of had to do it. None of that is true. None of that is true. FDR was very much hands-on when it came to that issue, and it is reflective of his attitudes towards other civil liberties issues as well. Now, what relevance does this have for today? It has incredible relevance in the sense that we're seeing these same things happening. Like I mentioned before with the Twitter files, we see parallels to that. We see the attempts to discredit people as purveyors of fake news. Again, that happened. We see surveillance, certainly. FDR's Senate committee created at the behest of FDR, led by an FDR ally, examined at least 3 million private telegrams.
Wow.
Without a subpoena. So that's surveillance state big time. And I think it has lessons for today. We need to get left and right together to defend civil liberties. And what we find is often the left is not interested in helping right wingers if their civil liberties are being violated, and vice versa. We need to build coalitions. And if you look at the 30s, you actually see coalitions. One of the leading civil libertarians of the time is a guy named Norman Thomas, a socialist. Norman Thomas is kind of the AOC of his time in terms of prominence, but he's out there defending civil liberties of conservatives and libertarians very aggressively. And you see some people on the right, like the publisher of the Chicago Tribune, a prominent conservative, helps to create a lot of free speech precedents in court cases he brings involving the left. So we need more of that. We have less of that today than is healthy, because then civil liberties for everybody are more vulnerable when we don't have these coalitions.
Hey, David, one thing that it creeps up here in the back of my mind, because you're talking about this. We've talked about FDR's legacy in the past here on the show, and maybe not to the extent we are today, but this is a conversation we're having. Why aren't other historians out there having this conversation? Why isn't FDR's actual legacy being taught as it should be in these government indoctrination camps that we call government schools?
It is really quite amazing as to how much of a sacred cow he is. Mm. Like I said, though, the whole Japanese internment thing, I would say if you want to start enlightening people, you start with that. And then you also point out how that is connected to other policies, how it reflects a general attitude. FDR's own attorney general was against Japanese internment. But he also said that Roosevelt, the president, was a person that said, look, he had to achieve a goal, he didn't worry about the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, due process. The important thing was the goal. That probably is one way to get it at people. And another way, again, as I said, is to point out these parallels in what we're seeing today. But point out the inspiring part, too. Say, look, your left-wing ancestors, assuming they're on the left, they were civil libertarians, many of them. Some of them weren't, but many of them were. And that tradition needs to be brought back. So this is a book I would hope people on the left and the right can read. And I want more people on the left to read it. I want them to read it saying, I'm going to tear this guy down. I'm going to discredit him. He's a hack. And I think they'll look at it. And the book has received praise from historians on the left, like Ellen Schrecker, an author of a book called Many Are the Crimes, very much pro-Roosevelt on other issues. Was a book about the Red Scare. And she, I sent her the book on a lark, and she wrote back a very nice blurb that is shown up at Amazon, among other blurbs that I have. But I'd like more people on the left to read it.
David, let me articulate my concern. This isn't towards you. This is just towards the world that we're in. Here's what happens. Something bad happens, politically speaking, policy-wise speaking, in present day. People on, let's just use example for today, you know, let's say it's Joe Biden does something nefarious. People on the right rightfully point and scream saying, look at what's happening right now. This is a violation of norms, of constitutional rights. It's violating the rights of the average citizen. The folks on the left will say, oh, shut up. You're overreacting. This is nothing. He's doing what he has to do. Fast forward 40 years. Historians might look back and say, okay, maybe he overstepped a little bit. And then fast forward 40 more years and they'll say, okay, yeah, so Joe Biden definitely overstepped here. But, you know, during the context of what was happening, he had to do what he had to do, right? So we see this is going to happen almost inevitably here with what we're experiencing today. And you look at history, that seems to be the exact course that has followed through as well. So why is it that we always seem to have history get rewritten 40, 50, 60 years after the actual action that takes place? I mean, I'm sure just like everybody else out there waiting for something to get released about JFK, because, you know, it seems like it's going to be time where they're going to say, okay, yes, the CIA did X, Y, and Z. Like, you're just kind of waiting for that, right? So what is it? Why do we have this 60-year lag time between actual historical events that are taking place and then the, I guess, the truth or a version of the truth being told decades later?
Well, there's a lot of reasons for that, I suppose. One is there's the hysteria of the moment, right? If we were to have had this conversation, it's been 4 years ago, you know, talking about a lot of the things that happened as the result of the lockdowns, for example, and COVID and so forth, we'd be branded marginal conspiracy theorists. So a lot of it is the hysteria of the moment. You saw that after 9/11, and Bush took that opportunity to get us in the war with Iraq, to expand it beyond bin Laden, go into Iraq. But the hysteria of the moment meant that you were kind of given a bit of a blank check. To some extent, we see that in the 30s and World War II, although it is worth noting that there was a lot of criticism of FDR at the time. FDR's surveillance, or the New Deal surveillance of private telegrams under Senator Black, his ally, was very controversial, was headline news. Other things were not controversial, but there were some things. And if you look back at the newspaper headlines in the period, you're often surprised by, oh, this FDR guy, everybody loves him. He's getting a lot of pushback, much more than you might expect from people at that time. And I think studying that pushback is very instructive.
So a lot of folks look at FDR, and I think they give him credit, David, specifically for the way, and I'm going to put this in the most gigantic air quotes I can, just for the audio listener, for saving America and getting us out of the Great Depression. Yeah. David.
That is one of my favorite hobby horses.
Take that one down, please.
Oh, I'll take that down. You got FDR said that, by the way. Gee, how convenient, right? I saved the system. Why do these businessmen hate me so much? Why do people hate me? I'm saving the system. First of all, okay, for that argument to be true, you have to find a substantial threat from either the left or the right in the United States. Well, where's the threat from the left? The Communist Party in 1932, when FDR ran a conventional campaign, in fact, he attacked Hoover at times as a spendthrift, got, I don't know, 1% of the vote. Socialist Party maybe got 3 or 4%. So the left never did very well, 1936 as well. So I don't see the threat of a revolution against capitalism. Is there a fascist threat? Well, there's no fascist third party in the United States. You see these big pictures of the Boone meeting at Madison Square Garden. Well, that's just about every single member of that organization, right? These are marginal groups These aren't groups that are going to be taking over the country. So that whole theory falls apart because let's look at the threats. They aren't there to an extent that there is a threat of revolution in the United States. And for that argument to be true, you have to show that. I don't see it. I think FDR could have gone in a very different direction in 1933 and done it. I don't think anyone forced, that the New Deal was inevitable or had to happen, or if it didn't happen, these bad things would happen. We'd had depressions before. This was the worst. And partly it was the worst because of FDR and Hoover's policies, which really delayed recovery needlessly. But we've been through things like that before, and there's no sign of a revolution. A lot of people are mad. They're angry. There's a lot of populism, you could say, but a revolution to overthrow the system, I don't see evidence that that's in the cards. So that's his favorite argument, and people buy that argument without question, but I don't think it holds up.
How about this one? Well, it's not even an argument. I'm just going to ask a question. I'm going to ask it as black and white as I can. David, was FDR a racist?
Yes, very much so. And if you look at his private comments, you can see them about African Americans, Japanese Americans. You see this racism. And on the Japanese Americans issue, it's interesting. And again, you could say, all right, a lot of other people at the time thought that way. That's true. But in the 1920s, FDR was an op-ed columnist. He wrote for a paper called the Macon Daily Telegraph. And in that paper, he wrote a series of articles where he said, regarding Japanese Americans, we got to keep them out, right? California is right to deny Japanese immigrants property rights. We should ban interracial marriage because commingling of Japanese and Caucasian blood will produce worse results, things like that. So this racism. But if you look at the policy, a lot of it FDR is a political animal. And he doesn't do things for African Americans because he feels it's not necessary in terms of votes. So, for example, there'd been an anti-lynching bill in Congress. It had been supported by President Harding and President Coolidge. FDR does not support it, and it fails. So he doesn't risk it. And historians excuse that, by the way, saying, well, he had to do that because he'd lose his New Deal. I don't buy that. Again, I don't think that's true. His own vice president, who's a conservative Texan, even thinks that lynching has gone too far and something needs to be done. So he doesn't do that. And there's a lot of examples in the book that people don't know about of FDR and African-Americans, especially African-American Republicans, that people might find quite eye-opening.
Well, and how about this, David, as we're going towards the tail end of the conversation here, let's use this as an opportunity to learn, right? And I would love to hear your thoughts here for this. What can historians of today learn from their telling of history based on what you've seen in the past and the way that history has been rewritten, I guess is the best way to frame it, or at the very least written through a very obvious political narrative and lens. So to the historians of today, but also the historians for tomorrow, what would be the advice to David to effectively and articulately, not just outlining what actually happened, but in terms of providing that context and nuance for the future generations to be able to effectively look back at today and have a true understanding of what actually happened and the context behind the why? Are you tired of just managing through each day, constantly battling pain, anxiety, and sleepless nights? Well, it's time for a change. Experience the transformative power of Ebel's CBD. Say goodbye to survival mode and hello to thriving. Visit BrianNicholsShow.com/Ebel's, E-A-B-L-E-S, and use code TBNS for an exclusive 15% off your order. Your journey to wellness starts now. And now, back to the show.
Okay, well, you use the term obvious, and I think I'll use that an obvious response. What goes around comes around. That's what historians can learn from this. And a lot of them have learned it, but they haven't fully learned it, enough of them, I think. And that is, if you have sedition trials, if you violate, which we did in the 1930s, very similar today, you sweep people up, and those trials were eventually denounced. You had them during the World War II. If you have mass surveillance, which again was denounced during the period, if you have all of this, yeah, it's being used against people that you politically might not think are good people, right? Because most historians are on the left, but it's going to be used against you eventually. So realize that. Realize that's the price. We see that during the Red Scare of the 1950s. A lot of the things FDR did to the political right to the 1940s created precedents for him to do the same thing to the political left after that. Sedition trials, which everyone's applauding, a lot of people are applauding, were used for horrible purposes against people on the left. They're blank checks. Domestic terrorism laws now being used against the left in Georgia environmentalists, are blank checks. If you're going to prosecute somebody, prosecute for them something familiar, right? Something traditional in the criminal code, trespass or assault, that kind of thing. Don't go after them. It feels good maybe at the moment on some broad open-ended thing like sedition. And that's going to bite you. That's going to get you later if you do that. So that's the lesson I'd like people to try to take in, and some have, but a lot, unfortunately, have not.
You can only help people who want to learn. You can't force other folks to learn. They have to do it on their own path. So, David, there's a lot to unpack here. And unfortunately, we just hit the tip of the iceberg and we're already hard pressed for time, which means that folks need to make sure they have a call to action here for today's episode. And that is go check out the new book, The New Deal's War on the Bill of Rights, The Untold Story of FDR's Concentration Camps, Censorship, and Mass Surveillance. David, where can folks go ahead and grab their version of your book today if they want to go ahead and learn and read some more?
Of course, they can get it from Amazon. Just look it up. But I'd recommend they go to the Independent Institute. So you go to independent.org and you'll find it there highlighted. So help them out. But you can get it both places.
Love it. Awesome. And how about this, David, as we go towards our final thoughts today, I'll kick things off and then I'll turn things over to you. We look at the past 4 years, and let's start here. The past 4 years of COVID insanity have been just that, insanity. And yet, we look to the folks who are telling the story of what happened, and they're acting like the government's response was just, and it made sense. And the folks who were saying, no, this is insane, are kind of looking at this saying, whoa, you're coming around to some of the points that we've been making, but you're painting a picture as though it wasn't that bad. And actually, the government's response was good. And I think that's a good example of why it's important for us to have books like what you have here, David, telling the truth and calling out the false narratives for what they are. Because when you create the false narratives, those false narratives become false truths. And when those false truths become false truths, then they become false facts. And false facts will damage and destroy generations of actually understanding what happened. So fast forward 100 years from today, when I hope the next pandemic doesn't happen, but if it does happen, the folks from 100 years from now will look back and say, well, this is what they did and it worked back then, right? Versus the reality of the folks on the ground who are saying, whoa, this is insane. Hold tight. Maybe we shouldn't label people essential versus non-essential. Maybe we shouldn't be forcing vaccination on folks in order to go work at certain places. Maybe we shouldn't be requiring people to have a vaccine passport to go to a restaurant. It's those voices who were standing up and saying no that I think actually helped bring an end to some of the insanity. Will those voices be remembered? Will those voices be not only remembered, but talked about in the history? That's where we come in, to make sure that the history is being told, the real history. That's my final thoughts for today. David, what do you have for us on your end? And of course, where can folks go ahead and continue the conversation with you after we wrap up today?
Well, you on the whole COVID thing, I would say, yeah, they can look at those people, but they can also look at international comparisons. Sweden didn't do any of this nonsense. My own, you know, the country where my ancestors from Norway did very little of it. They had no masks. They never did masks, right? So there were people at the time, there were countries at the time that pursued different policies. You see that during the Great Depression. Canada didn't have a single bank failure because basically they didn't put restrictions on branching of private banks. So I think international comparisons are a good way to look at it. Certainly, if you want to talk with me more, I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. And if anyone wants to send me emails, anyone has any questions, I'll be glad to field them or reaction or criticisms of the book. And I would hope people that don't agree with me, that think FDR is a great guy, would look at the book and go look at it like, I'm going to show this guy up. I want people like that. So as far as a conversation, that's the kind of conversation I'd like. And I'm not having enough of, unfortunately.
Yeah. A lot of people, I don't think they want to have conversations nowadays. They want to just make a statement and let it be their statement. They're going to make state their yeah. truth. And you're not believing my truth. You're not letting me speak my truth. You don't like me.
Well,
let me
also point out that we see friendships across the political spectrum are much more common during this period. I think H.L. Mencken was kind of a libertarian, but he had friends everywhere. And that's unfortunate, too. We don't have more of that.
It's tough. It's tough. I mean, as we wrap up today, David, I know I've invited dozens, hundreds of folks. You know, we've been doing this show now since 2018. And we've had a lot of folks they've had invites that are more on the left to come on the show. And in my experience, folks on the left don't want to have this dialogue. They don't want to have a discourse. You know, during COVID, I had some very close friends who were more on the left. And I wanted to have a conversation with them about where we disagreed. And it wasn't even a matter of having a conversation. It was a matter of, oh, you want people to die. I'm not going to have a conversation with you. You want to kill people. Like, that was the mentality. And I mean, it's hard to have a dialogue with folks who they jump to the worst case framing of their competition or the opponent in this case. And
or they ignore you. And I've had some respond like that. They'll like that. Well, I don't want to read this
right-wing
practice. It's not. I'm a historian. I've got primary sources. I back them up here. I try to be fair. I don't want to even look at that. And that's just a shame. And I'm sorry to hear what your experience is because it's dispiriting.
Well, and what's unfortunate, David, is that I think my experience is not it's not unusual for today's modern discourse. And man, and I think, you know, as we wrap up, we'll end with this, is that my experience – you know, maybe the folks who were calling out FDR back in the 30s and 40s, right? Their experience of the immediate societal pushback, and yes, with that, maybe losing some of those friendships, or at the very least, those friendships changing and the conversations therein changing. But I think it's important for us to continue to speak what is the truth, not just our truth, but actually, to your point, you know, facts, figures, things that can be verifiably backed up. That's important for us to continue to do, even when it's not popular, when it will lead to folks pushing back and maybe some friendships becoming a little bit different compared to what they used to be, because it's us doing this now that gives permission to the historians 40 years from now to actually go back and say, hold up, no, what you're saying, you know, today, Mr. Competitive Historian, isn't true. I'm looking and reading this book from David Beto, and he's making a very different argument, and he's got the facts and the stats to back it up. That's what we have to be able to do today. So I say all that. Please, folks, if you're listening to today's episode and you feel that you're bashing your head against the wall, that the folks out there who you're trying to convince, you're trying to persuade, aren't listening, don't stress. Just keep doing what you're doing, because even though you're not going to see the instant return on your efforts today, right, there is no instant gratification. You are, in fact, planting the seed for a tree that you might not be able to enjoy the shade of tomorrow. So know that your efforts are not being wasted. They're not going unnoticed. As a matter of fact, you're actually making it a lot easier for folks for tomorrow. That's what I have for us today, folks. Thank you for joining us. I know you guys enjoyed today's episode, digging into the untold, or at the very least, the not popular story of FDR. Please go ahead, do me a favor, give today's episode a share. Wherever it is you do that, please tag yours truly, Facebook, Twitter, all the social medias at B Nichols Liberty. And with that being said, please go ahead and give David some love. Go ahead and buy his brand new book. Links all in the show notes. Plus, if you want to go ahead, learn more about David, read his bio, link over at BrianNicholsShow.com. Now, for the podcast version of the show, you can catch the podcast, the audio-only version of the show, wherever it is you consume your favorite podcast, Spotify, YouTube Music, Apple Podcasts, I Prefer Podcast Addict. Go ahead, hit subscribe, and when you do, which I know for all of you out there who are recently joining the Brian Nichols Show audience, I see y'all. Yeah, we're getting like hundreds of new listeners every single week. So I know there's a lot of you who you haven't checked out some of the episodes from yester year. Go hit subscribe and download all unplayed episodes. We have over 815 episodes here in the archives going all the way back to 2018, where we're digging into some very controversial, air quotes on the question on controversial, for issues that were, you know, raised up in the past that maybe had a narrative, but now we're actually going through and talking about it through a different context. We talked about that with Joe Golisarian, for example, about Woodrow Wilson. That's just one example, what we did today with FDR. So please go through the archives, check out some of those awesome conversations. I guarantee a handful of them are going to leave you educated, enlightened, and informed. And then, of course, the video version of the show, YouTube, Rumble, Twitter, X.com, yes, as well as Facebook, video versions of the show uploaded in their entirety. Please go ahead and give them a share. And when you do, again, please make sure you tag yours truly at B Nichols Liberty. And David, I have one last thing to the audience, and that is please support the folks who support us here at the Brian Nichols Show, and that is our phenomenal sponsors. So whether it's our friends over at Amp America, Cardio Miracle, Ebels, CBD, Liquid Freedom Energy Tea, and more, please go ahead and support them because they are the folks who help us keep the lights on. That's all I have for you today. David, any final words for the Brian Nichols Show audience as we wrap things up?
No, great questions. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Absolutely. David, thank you for joining us. And folks, again, please go ahead and check out David's brand new book, The New Deal's War on the Bill of Rights, the untold story of FDR's concentration camps, censorship, and mass surveillance. Link in the show notes. With that being said, Brian Nichols signing off here on The Brian Nichols Show for Professor David Beto. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to The Brian Nichols Show. Find more episodes at BrianNicholsShow.com.